In 1992, Paul Keating altered the language around Aboriginal affairs when he gave the iconic Redfern Park speech. The speech set the tone for future reconciliation. Daniel Sleeman has more.
It begins, I think, with an act of recognition. Recognition that it was we who did the dispossessing. We took the traditional lands and smashed the traditional way of life. We brought the diseases and the alcohol. We committed the murders. We took the children from their mothers. We practiced discrimination and exclusion.
Sunday, the 10th of December, marked 25 years since Paul Keating gave his 1992 Redfern Park speech. It was a speech that aimed to reach out to the Aboriginal population in Australia to recognise historical wrongs and pave the way for earnest reconciliation. The political and public discourse around Aboriginal affairs up until that point seldom, if ever, used rhetorical language infused with an admission of failure, a failure to correct the historical record, to take responsibility for past crimes, but also a failure to celebrate Aboriginal contributions to Australian culture. I spoke to Tom Clark, Associate Professor at Victoria University, about the rhetorical legacy of the Redfern Park speech. How do you think the Redfern speech changed the language around Indigenous issues?
So it changed the language in some quite obvious ways. It said things clearly from the point of view of government that government had been unwilling or confident enough to say before. Things that are the famous things the speech said. There's this turn about a third of the way in when he says, when Paul Keating, that is, says, it begins, I think, with that act of recognition. We took the traditional lands and smashed the traditional way of life. We brought the diseases, the alcohol, we committed the murders, and so on. Saying those things in such clear terms from somebody who is the duly sworn Prime Minister of the country, in full public view, not quite live to air, but very widely broadcast in whole and in excerpt from that same evening on. It was a huge reframing of what a sympathetic government, at least, would be able to say from now on.
One of the notable features of the language used in the speech is the use of the collective pronoun we. Paul Keating is emphatic when he says, "It was we who did the dispossessing. We took the traditional lands and smashed the traditional way of life."
I think when people complain about discussing semantics or splitting hairs over wording, this is the kind of speech that really reminds us how important sometimes it is to focus on the words. So we there, from the Prime Minister of the whole country, which is to say Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australia as a one country, that we is undoubtedly a we from non-Indigenous Australia. And that's clearly how it's meant, not just from a government that did these things, but from a non-Indigenous Australian community that could count on the government to allow it to continue doing these things. In the cases of murders and dispossession and so on, there was a clear understanding from before 1901 that government wouldn't get in the way of some tough actions that made things easier for non-Indigenous Australians at the expense of the Indigenous people. And there's actually quite a bit of evidence out there that this isn't just what Paul Keating felt like saying or what his government felt like saying. And it's really, really clear that the moment you start talking about the possibility of reconciliation or asking about relations between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australia, it is just crystal clear that people start to default to a we, non-Indigenous Australians, that is. They default to a we that is all non-Indigenous Australians from the First Fleet through to the latest people cleared to join the community from immigration detention or whatever. You know, but non-Indigenous Australians are we, and we have something to say about them or something to discuss with them or some kind of government that needs to work for them as well.
With the Rudd apology in 2008, the Australian Labor Party seems to be driving the reconciliation agenda, leading to speculation that it was and remains a partisan issue in Australian politics.
Partisanship, I think, is less a question of who comes up with this agenda, more a partisan question of which political organisations are more receptive to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not Kevin Rudd who invented the need to say sorry. He's just the first Prime Minister who was willing to go through with that project. But the say sorry agenda comes fundamentally from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australia. When John Howard says that he's unwilling to say sorry, and when he said that the children of today are not guilty for the sins of the grandparents in the past, effectively, mm-hmm. Howard did one thing that by and large non-Indigenous Australians tend to agree with, and that is the non-inherited guilt line. I think there's a lot of people in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities who are furious with this logic. But there's no doubt that it resonates among many non-Indigenous Australians. We're not guilty for the sins of 100 years ago.
Why do you think Keirdin chose Redfern as a site for delivering this speech?
Oh, very clearly, because he wanted to go to what was then a live and present site where the fractures of Australian history around Indigenous, non-Indigenous relations were not just visible, which is helpful for the cameras, but really keenly felt.
We're beginning to see how much we owe the Indigenous Australians and how much we've lost by living so apart. We cannot imagine that the descendants of people whose genius and resilience maintained a culture here through 50,000 years or more will be denied their place in the modern Australian nation.
Former Prime Minister Paul Keating at Redfern Park there, ending that report by Daniel Sleeman.